back swimming. Nice pool.
This is a knives pool. I was like, I'd be swimming in a pool of knives. But I realized what it was.
Please find some place to do this. So we have NG.
There we go.
this eye. So the lips come in more and more. Put the camera into your mouth, then you would be able to see it. Yeah? So, A, E, E. Right?
A, E, E.
Yeah, you don't need the lips for the E. Because it becomes an E like that, okay? We are speaking about chant, I'm not speaking about opera, star, or whatever. So, please try to do without any lip. Activity, only tongue. Interesting, it's not a, e, e. It's all inside.
Between.
lips and the ones that don't use lips, and to be very conscious about his tongue function. I is very important because many times people don't know what they are doing when you say E or A exactly. And when you put them in this row, then okay, it's my tongue. Okay, especially when you connect it with speaking. Hey, E, there it goes. Thank you very much. Please sit down. Paul, did you bring your simplex? Yes. Yesterday we made a reduction of the constituens EOS, and Paul was so good to have a look at the other simplex to see how the melody looks in that book. So I suggest that maybe we could do like this. Oh, you made copies. Wonderful. Fantastic.
A memoir of our time together.
Great.
I want to do it differently, but the lady downstairs. Do you have extra copies of
your game now? Of the constituents? Do you have extra copies of your game?
Because you didn't bring your book? Or?
I brought my book. I just didn't bring my game
now. Oh, okay.
The one with the reduction.
Before we turn to this, there's a question about this M and NG exercise, and the question was, the tongue is in a different position with M and NG, yes of course, when you say the M, the tongue is behind the upper teeth, please try it, when you say NG, the back of the tongue is up. No, there's no different way. You know, the tongue is so important. I hope I can explain this in English, but I will try. When I would put a lamp here, and this is a mirror, and I would catch the light of that lamp with my mirror, and I would direct the light on that wall, then I could say that that's the voice, the larynx, the production of the sound, and this is the tongue. And with the slightest movement of this mirror, the position of that light on that wall changes enormously. You know? When I do like this, it's gone. So a little change in the position of the tongue, and the tone goes into another direction. That's why the tongue is so important. And that's why you always have to wonder, what is the tongue doing in this vowel? And if the sound is not good, what is the problem of the tongue? And that's difficult because a lot of things you can see from the outside. We saw that in the lesson of Melanie Malinka, wonderful. She hears and sees immediately what's the problem. But as for the tongue, it's almost, you must hear it and know. I know it. So, that's about the tongue. And your second question was that, speaking about connecting vowels and using the colors in between, when I would sing a word like eos, for example, And I tell my choir, don't sing aeos, don't go from one vowel to another by using all the colors in between. What is the solution? Should I say aeo, aeo? Should I separate them or what? Well, I think here you should use the colors in between, but very fast. Aeos, instead of aeo. When you do it slowly, it's terrible. It's the same with legato singing. When I sing, you say, wow. You know, we have this kind of popular style. I don't know if you have it too. Yeah. People like it very much. So, legato is this, but fast. Yeah? I think that's when you start with a new scholar, number one is that you can connect two tones. That it doesn't sound like there's a connection.
About aeos, isn't that, wouldn't that change just the lips anyway? I mean, is it you're kind of in the same spot for a and o?
Aeo, no changes. But it's a good question because here you have a word, no lips, lips.
Yeah.
No lips, lips. Just sing a piece of chant and only think about, do I need lips or no lips? You will see something very interesting. Most of the time you don't need lips, by the way. Okay. Now, thank you, Paul. Let's sing this antiphon from the Rabbi Simplex. What's up in this door? Development is the same. It would be interesting to see if you watch this, if you can find this back in our rich. I think you will not exactly, but maybe some things, yes. So thank you very much. It's a very good extra information.
It's an illustration of the kind of music that Solen chose for the simplex. They were looking for things that sang almost immediately.
Yeah.
So there's a repetition in the intonations of each phrase. And they differ only in the
So the, for us in this week, the interesting thing is the comparison between the two, the result of what we did and what we see here.
This is 8th century.
Yeah, great, great.
Yeah.
Yes. When you look at chant as starting from a simple melody and then growing out into it, as a tree grows, you know, then when you look at it in a different way. Great. What did you think about our performance of yesterday? Barbara?
I thought that if we had sung from a score with no markings, that we all marked in on our scores, you know, we might have done better. I'm not talking about the printed markings, but all our notes, at least that, those arrows. And
Too much information.
Yeah. I thought perhaps we were a little slow.
Yes.
And not forward moving in the
okay. The small group did very well. Thank you very much.
Yeah.
And we did well too. Only I had this remembrance of how we finished the rehearsal, and it really moved forward in a fantastic way. But I think it was almost impossible to, you know, what we did was singing the reduction, singing the whole melody, reduction, whole melody, and then you could keep this connection of the two in mind. It's almost impossible to do that in the afternoon. I mean, you know, you have to build up these things, and so it has to become a culture of the group.
I just think
if
we
could have
sung just once again.
Yeah, that's true.
Even the beginning, to get you together.
Experience with the Skoda and the Abbey is also that even if we rehearse before Mass, which we always do, I mean the moment itself, it's always something unique, which is impossible to prepare. Sometimes it just happens and sometimes it doesn't happen. And what is it? I don't know. It's also the moment and then the concentration in the church or I don't know.
Well, there was a lot of activity.
Yes. Children were very unquiet.
Yes. Well, and there was just a lot of scurrying around in the church, and so I think that's very distracting, and it is an inhibitor to getting the focus and the intensity because our brains are kind of all over the place, and I think those are all wonderful excuses.
Well, you know, just look at every performance as just one little step in your whole life or your career as a conductor, and then you don't worry too much anymore about failures or successes.
And I think we're influenced by other sound. So if we were doing the whole mass, as opposed to having another solo singing their style, it's so easily to fall back into.
Yeah, you know what? Never mind. It was a little slow, I agree. But the connection between the groups was there, which was already very good. And I think we experienced in the rehearsal what can be the result of this kind of work. So that's the most important.
Our pauses were the longest.
Yes.
Yes. Yes.
So after we didn't try the verse with the drone, because we had no time to do it with the organ. So we were there with the organs. Practicing, but I would give it as a suggestion. Just try. Not every chant piece you can use it. Yeah. But if you try it, try to play the final, and if you sing it, it's good. Then you should try it once because it gives an extra dimension. And what is this extra dimension? It's like the sound of eternity is accompanying your chant. And also, you have this wonderful extra dimension of consonant and dissonant in the melody which occurs. Sometimes the tone becomes very expressive because it's this, you know, the second on the final. And then there's the relaxing. So I would suggest the final or the final $100 to all together. It depends on you should try. Your ear will get the answer. Yesterday we used completely other tones, so.
I also think that, you know, we spread ourselves too much.
Yesterday?
Yeah. If we like come together, then we'll be able to, you know, hear each other more and have that support.
Yeah. And then, yes. The best position, it's always very difficult because we have so few time and there are other groups. Mm-hmm. Last year, or 2 years ago, in this possibility to stand in the side chapel.
Yes.
And suddenly the sound was like,
mm-hmm.
It was a great
experience.
Only one of the priests didn't agree with that. It was a one-time experience. That's true. That's part of why we couldn't really move forward, because an octave is completely different from the unison. So that's more weight on your back. Men are carrying the women, and women are carrying the man. And it's like that. But you know, we were one group the whole week, so I thought we'll do this as one. And we'll use the octave just to give some structure to the verses. So the verses will be only men or only women, and then you give this extra dimension of form to a piece. Because that's very important. We were discussing that too with the colleagues, that the form of the piece is many times given by the verse, and that's why it really should be a smaller group or a solo voice, and not sung with the whole group. Because it might be nice sound, but the form of the piece is just disappearing completely. So that's another important principle of a form. As, relax, breathe, sing is an important thing.
And that was exactly my question, by the way. One follow-up on that. If you have a beginning scola, a new scola, without many members, would you recommend singing together with both men and women rather than dividing them up? Just having the men sing one and the women sing the other, or is that a matter of rehearsal time, or who's doing better, or what would you recommend?
I would start with men or women scola, or both at the same time, but not to put them together.
Okay.
Because this experience of one voice getting wings and being able to fly, it depends on this unison singing.
Could you have the men sing a drum while the women sing on top of it?
Yes, but poor man. They come to the rehearsal, they're all even dicks. They come home and the wife asks, how was your rehearsal? Oh, it was fantastic. You have these Greek Orthodox groups. And they are divided into two groups. The poor ones. I was saying, no, but really very impressive because their sound is enormous. And then the rest of the group is the more tenor-like voices. And they go enormously, you know. And it's really division. There's one group only for the drum. It's really very impressive. But I think the audition goes like this. Can he sing? Can he not sing?
Yeah.
Everybody's accepted as a member. So, let's just... siren.
And it should then just tell me to speed that up.
Yeah. And I go to. Yeah, speed up and make this sound slimmer. So you first you do. And then you do. And you lift your arms like that, you immediately feel that there's more support. Because you expand here, and that's a big issue in supporting. So the image of the frog is very helpful. I think. No? And if they don't know what a frog is, then take one to the rehearsal. So now, any volunteers to sing and to just show us how they would like Chan to sound like?
I've got disclaimers. We have not. We pulled a little group together that were very nice to already help me, and we have not been over this together at all.
Okay.
So it'll be pretty exciting.
Okay, good.
I'd like to do it from the back.
From the back. Okay. So that people are not watching you. Or?
Right. And I take a stand that's not on an angle.
We love. know, how do you listen to a performance like this? Are you just open to what you hear, or are you immediately giving your remarks, or how do you do that?
Well, if we decide that before, we're trying to learn here, so I think we're all very much locked into what's happening and not just, what's the experience?
Okay, good. What I liked very much was the full sound approach. So, I think you should sing chant with full sound. That means the voice in all its directions. And you did that very well. Very well. You hear men and women scholars sing with some kind of isolated voices. I don't know if I can give a good example. If it was only this, and also you hear scholars from monasteries. As if the body was this big. I think that's a pity, because we should use the whole instrument. And all we can read in the medieval manuscripts are the books about how to sing, they speak about using the voice in a full way. Very good.
Do you know the recordings of the Wiener Hofburg Kapelle with Pater Hubert Dampf?
Yeah.
They're really wonderful. They're marvelous because the sound of the scola is very strong and somewhat deep as well. Not that nasal, ethereal kind of voice, but very deep and rich.
It's a rich sound.
Yeah.
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 That's why the work on the sounds, the work on the voice, and the work on the vowels is as much important as the work on the interpretation, because it's a big part of the interpretation. Okay.
I love the full sound. I think I'm right. Can you give us some wisdom about when a text is really reverent, you want it to be reverent but not cautious? Do you know what I mean?
Yes.
You're sort of trying not to be, when you're trying to be reverent.
You thought it was cautious?
Not the sound, but maybe the movement.
What was the cautious element in it? And the singers themselves would say.
Well, I would just say because we haven't sung so far.
You could hear that.
If I had had an opportunity to work, as a group on the Jesus Christus, I would have suggested a vocal genuflection with perhaps a little bit darker, as if you might be bowing over at the name of Jesus. So there were all kinds of things that we had time to work on.
Okay. So that's the cautious element in it. Just very few rehearsal time, and then just chanting it. Of course you're cautious. What about vowels and consonants in this interpretation? Paul?
I was listening to the text. I was very unfamiliar with the chant, and I didn't hear enough of the text to understand what I was listening to.
Yeah, that's why it was good that we had no scores, because we were forced to only listen. And so text is vowels and consonants, and I think but many times we are, because of the long melismas, they're so concentrated on the vowels, but the consonants are disappearing. If the consonants are not clear enough, then something of the drawing gets away. And in this performance too, it would have been good to have a little more energy in the consonants. Also in the continent, you know that you are together with your neighbor singing in the continent. When you sing Alleluia, you are a little not together. That's a pity, but not probably in church nobody will hear that. But if the continents are not together, then it's more serious. So if I can make the same as my neighbor, one, it's a wonderful feeling, because you feel, yeah, exactly on the right moment together. And it gives some so I said about your performance at the first yesterday or before yesterday. But I could hear a drawing in it, not only a painting, but a drawing. Some kind of clarity. And that comes from the consonants. I think the vowels are very nice because of the full sound. Sometimes I thought, is it O or is it A? And then you have this element which the Germans call Vokalausgleich. It means something like bringing the vowels more or less together. The Germans use the Ö sound to mix with everything, so especially in opera style. And there's Ö in everything, because like that, you know, you don't have I, this separate colors like you have, but you have like, it's always the same instrument playing. In chant, I wouldn't use that, so I would take out all the mixture, and I would try to find a clear A, clear E, clear A, and make a recording of your group and listen. Is it really A or is it more like O? Is it really a O or is it more like O? You know, because many times we think we say a vowel, but when we listen, no, it's really not so clear as I thought. Any more?
I just had a question about the role of vibrato in chant.
Very good.
And does it different if you're singing with a group or singing solo, and is it different for men and women?
Yeah. Yes. The vibrato. What can you say about it? So you have a vibrato in your voice?
A little. I think I have a lot. I prefer a clean sound. I was also pretty nervous. So I think that plays into it. But I don't like vibrato. I work very hard with my choir on a more pure tone. When a soloist does it, I prefer that the soloist use the soloist's natural voice so that it doesn't sound constricted. But I also don't pick soloists that have great vibrato.
So when you did this solo, I was thinking I was thinking about the lecture of Sister yesterday, and listened to all kinds of liturgical music sung by soloists, and you hear a lot of it, even when it sounds like a trill, sometimes it sounds like a trill, and. I would say, why not? Only, and that's a matter of musical taste and musical style, maybe. So, when at the ending notes of the phrase, I would try to avoid it there. So if you have a long note somewhere in the middle and your voice is like, I would say, okay, why not? But the ending tone, I would really try to make that without vibrato, because, you know, why making a trail on the last note? Because things are. Don't you agree?
I have a question because I think it's a very practical question that many people face with their choirs. Many people are working with a choir members who have a more advanced age, and so they don't have the support. I guess all the things that you've been telling us all week, that would apply. I mean, do you have any special ideas for this type of voice?
Well, first of all, if I may, let me finish what I was telling you. So I think that in this case, this solo was very, very beautiful, your solo. And the vibrato was to me, to my ears, was no problem, only at the ending tones. If you would have been able to avoid it there, then it would be definitely perfect. And as you said yourself, in a group, this is more difficult, because then the movement of one vibrato is never together with another, so you get this mixing up of the sound. And now we come to the problem that how can we control this vibrato, how can we avoid it, or how can we make this straight sound? Does it depend on age? I think it, yes, in a way. Although I had younger singers too who did it and said that they couldn't avoid it. I would not say that, so as a conductor, I would not say, oh, sing without vibrato. I never go to someone and take a man's throat. Because, you know, it's terrible. It's a freedom of the larynx, but it can only be controlled by this support here. And if you concentrate more on here, then this becomes more quiet. And if you concentrate more on here, then it goes. And even with old people, why not? I would do exercises like we did just now, maybe not like this, but only like that. Or push here and try to push away my hands, or I don't know, why not? Or sing and make this movement. But never try to fix here. That would be a pity. Thank you very much for the performance. Stronger when you look at the same goal news. I think that's maybe more authentic than a note, you know? So it's a matter of notation too, when you put two notes and you think that, oh, there are two sounds. But maybe chant is much more about sound movement, about connection, than about notes. Notes came very late in history. In opera, but of course, in opera, the goal is to have a big voice which can fill the hall.
But you talk about that too.
Yeah, it's true, but there are different kinds of halls, because the church helps the sound carry through the church, and the theater doesn't do that.
It dies.
It dies, right? So I really have to, there's the orchestra, so I really have to. Do something. You know, you have to be a sportsman, and you have to be in perfect condition. You have to put on the vacuum cleaner, and you have to. Oh!
Hearing the Vienna mass yesterday was a good, I think, a good example of hearing the difference between the kind of vocal production.
Yes.
Because that's more like opera.
Yes. As the tenor sang it, for example.
That tenor.
Wonderful for Vienna. But not good for the
can that really not good for jazz, not good for, you know, maybe they can change that. Like,
it's kind of like, I don't know, Aaron Mass.
But it's completely different. Completely different. Yeah, that's true, although it should not be too much
interior.
You know, as saying a sermon, you are a performer too, you are connected with the inside, but also you are giving out, giving something.
I like the word proclaim for that
conversation. Proclaim, yes.
Perform has a secular connotation.
Yes.
But proclaim, the word is to be proclaimed. So he's
yeah.
like a trumpet, you know, the angels with the trumpets.
Yeah, good.
Barbara's point was very good too, and I thought even within the opera itself, for instance, if you were to take Desdemona's prayer as the Ave Maria in the last act of Otello, the way she sings that, the tone is more. Throughout most of it, not the self shaped part, but the Ave Maria, it's much more prayer. I mean, it is a prayer, and the tone is closer to chant than the more emotional sound that is typical
yeah.
of opera.
Yeah.
You know, what you say about vowels and whatnot is really true. We have two cantors in our parish. One is an opera singer, and the other is classically trained, and you can't understand what they're saying. And no, and the congregation complains that they can't follow.
Yeah.
Because they're using their voice as an instrument, you know, and they're more concerned with that than they are with articulation.
Yeah, that's what I said. It's probably a big
But issue. There are opera singers
yeah.
who can sing.
Yeah, there are most opera singers. At least when you go on
the
Someone said recently that if you're going to sing the readings at Mass, then you actually need to be very distinct with the syllables. And,
William Marx is talking about
that's great. He was saying, don't sing the word of the Lord, but sing the word of the Lord. Make it very
yeah.
distinct.
Yeah,
and
more.
It's very interesting. When we had the song readings at the ordinary form from the pulpit, I was sitting probably about three quarters back. I couldn't understand the word that the trained singers were singing. But when I go to the extraordinary form, and I have an untrained singer priest, I can pick out every word. You know? And they're facing the other way. But they're untrained, so they're just kind of, I don't know if anybody else has ever noticed that before, but when the trained singer's like, oh, okay, I have no idea what you're saying. But
yeah.
They don't
know. That's a beautiful sound.
It's a wonderful sound, it's perfectly in tune, but when you're untrained priest, you know what I mean? So,
yeah. Can learn from the,
yeah,
the amateur. It's the field of, you know, the where is speaking end, where does speaking ends and singing begins. Sprechgesang.
Along the same sort of lines, but relating to legato, I found that a lot of times when I am working with professional singers who are used to singing, you know, Mozart masses or Palestrina or something. When they look at chant notation, they might be able to read it, but every note is so distinctive. There's no sense of legato that relates to phrasing.
That's
and,
true.
And I don't have a problem with untrained singers. I mean, there are all sorts of other
yeah.
problems.
Yeah.
But it's really frustrating for me to sometimes work with professional singers because then they come in and they think, oh, because I'm in tune.
Yeah.
Without all these vocal problems with
yeah.
untrained singers, I can't learn anything about phrasing. They think they have nothing to learn.
I agree completely. They're so focused on their own voice production,
yeah.
sound production, that, for example, when I ask them, sing, they won't do that. Because this boost is not enough sound for
mm-hmm.
what they were working for all these years.
Yeah.
So they'll always be, that's why working with amateur singers sometimes or many times is much more, you know, you can form them more. You can just say, I want like this, that, and you rehearse, and you get it. And also because professional singers, today they work with you, tomorrow they work with your colleague, the day after tomorrow with the third conductor, so there's no style in their singing. They do just what they always do. Today they do it for you, tomorrow they do it for you, tomorrow they do it for you.
You're saying that they don't have any, like the quote, dumb singer, you know, that they don't have any idea of their own, like, interpretation?
Well, we are speaking about professional singers, but there are, of course, those who can do it. The real good professional singer will adjust himself or herself to your wishes.
You would do to just, in a tactful way, make a professional singer who isn't interested in anything you have to say aware that he or she has to listen more to phrasing, that there is phrasing that's just not happening.
Yeah. I think you should just continue to ask it, not give up. I saw this rehearsal with a Russian conductor, his name was Mravinsky. And so, you know, in this period, when you were sitting in the orchestra, you were just a slave of the conductor. The conductor was a dictator. and he was coming down, it was very impressive. And they were playing pianissimo. Once more. Pianissimo. And I was looking at this film, I thought, oh, it is pianissimo, what does he want? And he did it 7 times. Pianissimo! And then after 7 times, suddenly, and then you heard something like, oh, incredible. So soft and so beautiful. And it was just, I don't give up. I want it.
Our conductor in
we think, so I think, after 3 times, I think, oh, we can do it. Our reaction is that when a professional, after 3 times, probably doesn't understand it, he doesn't want it, or he's not able to do it. But it's a matter of getting the key, opening the door.
It might just
that's been hard, actually.
It might
sometimes
just
it stop
yeah.
working, yeah.
So I would say persistence. That's the same problem when you are standing before an orchestra. You're standing here and, you know, you cannot play the trumpet, you cannot play the harp, you cannot play many instruments. Maybe you can play only one, or maybe you can play none at all. But yet you're standing here and you are telling them that do this or do that. It can feel like, oh, can I ask that? But you know, your task is completely different. You have been looking at the score, you have been thinking about this is the most important part, I want to have this come out of the whole structure of the piece, this. And here I want to slow down a little. You were the only person who was thinking about these things, the big plan. They didn't do that, they were just rehearsing, trying to do everything technically as good as possible. They are not interested in that. And you are putting things in place. So just don't get intimidated by a good singer or a good player because he's doing his thing and your thing is coordinating the sound and getting an idea about the piece. But I know what you mean. I mean, and especially for orchestras, you feel like, ooh, they're sitting down, wow.
You suggest on hypercritical choir members? Well, the director is in the Midwest.
Did you get their phone number?
It's a real problem.
Yeah, I know.
It's a real problem.
If it doesn't stop by itself, I would really speak one by one. And say, you know, I must say something to you because this is really becoming a problem for me. My problem is this and that. If you really think you need a better conductor, then you should go because I will not go. I will. No. But don't stay and got the chair on the line.
Yeah, I've tried to make the point that my opinions and my approach are just as valid. We may be different, we may approach music differently, we may emphasize different things, but that doesn't mean that one is right and the other is wrong. We simply have different approach.
Well, there are always, you know, always these psychological things in the air.
Yeah, sure.
People are sitting there who are maybe jealous that you are standing there. They would like to stand up too.
You know, maybe approach it in a way of asking them, you know, what is it that this person is doing that they're not doing? And then maybe consider that there might be something of value in that person.
Uh-huh.
Is, you know,
is there a connection between this subject and the subject of style and interpretation?
I think so.
And in what way? But what is the connection between these kind of problems and your work and style of
literature? Yeah, I just want to, if work is in a rough style, I want to give you a very clear example that happened to me as a student. A student of chant. I don't know how many of you know Bonifacio Barocco. Bonifacio Barocco. He was an abbot, then he became an abbot. Fine musician. I mean, within chant is aspect. Okay, we taught everywhere, we taught Europe, the boys from Korea, we were just like everywhere. His style was very attuned to solemn. And then there were some squabbles in the Vatican and he left. And we left the priesthood later. But when he left, the day he was giving the school, he was also giving the priesthood. So we, the students, we were like, I can't even, tears just came to my eyes and I didn't.
Sure.
Okay. So with all that, function, definitely, because it's something that I've passed. This time was different. Now came this professor, he came from Milan. He was adapted with the Ambrosian style. Mm-hmm. It was good, it was perfect, but we just for the first one didn't see
everything. Your heart was not open.
Yeah, his style for us was not. We wanted to do it that way, you know. And at the point, you know, we all started talking to each other. And we are putting more on this man. It's not the problem. We are the problem. It's just that we have just come out from very strong, you know, emotional point and so on. And then everybody started like, okay, let's take this one. Let's take it. And after the second one, we all were like, we don't need it.
I think this is a very good example. The contact of the group, what is going on there, is as much important as in all your ideas about style and the depiction.
How do you get your ideas across to them in a non-threatening way, essentially?
Let them talk with each other.
Yeah.
Ask them to talk with each other. Yeah. You know, and then find a time just to converse. You know, just converse with them. If there is one person in the group that you can really like relate very closely to, talk with that person. You know, I said, you know what, this is what I feel. I know this other person did things like this, but there are two different people, there are two different styles, there are two different schools.
Yeah.
And they have not in chant, they have schools in chant.
Yeah.
You know, the three professors that teach chant here don't do the same way.
No,
even though you listen to the church, they don't do the same way. They are from three schools. So one cannot be good and the other one not good. So if there's somebody in the group, let that person talk with that person and say, this is what I think, and is it possible for you to explain to your colleagues? Sometimes it is better when students, there are students now, when members of the group, when they talk with each other, than you trying to talk to them.
I think what many of us, and this, I know this is my question, but kind of like an hour before Mass to rehearse the progress or something like that. So how do you stop, how much interpretation should you put into the chant for a choir? Because sometimes like if I say, oh, there's a, in the manuscript there's a Shalaitic up here, you know, but then we get to Mass, when we sing it like that, because when we get to Mass, it's just like autopilot. You know, so, and they totally miss the interpretation. So if you only have a small amount of time to rehearse all the progress, how much versus, you know, what's written on the page, like you said, if it's written down, it's there, you have to do it, you know? So, like, how much, would you recommend maybe starting from, like, an unmarked manuscript, and then just being consistent with maybe singing tunes, rather than using the slum editions all the time? Like, what, you know, limited rehearsal time and interpretation, how much?
It depends, and you have to build up something, you know? It's, you kind of prepare everything, for one Sunday, it's like, you know, we can do this because we have been doing it for many years, and I would build it up like starting with notation with no dots in the position, it's just a clear picture, and only add one or two things. Later you could add some of the same volumes of transformation. And then you could start with the gradual syntax. So take those things which you can prepare in a good way and then build it up. Your goal is not here, your goal is there. I think I would like to finish here because we have Mass at 11. So we can be there in time. I would like to thank you very much for being so. Maybe, and for being being open to try out things which you maybe didn't do before. So thank you very much. I hope it was helpful a little. If you have any special ideas or wishes or needs about some kind of chant coaching, maybe it would be good to tell me or anyone of the faculty. So they maybe can put it in a new form next year, I don't know. If you think that this would be very interesting or this would be very helpful, please be free to give your ideas to one of us. Thank you very much.
Thank you.